This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to a special Tuesday night edition of NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, my regular colleague Ezra Ginsberg. Dave Manuk from IllegalCurve.com is filling in once again for the vacationing Richard Pollock. And producer Michael Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Jam-packed 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Tuesday evening. Over under the number of times I say Wednesday evening, guys.
Three?
So I'm going to go under.
Okay. Anyways, jam-packed evening of hockey coverage for you on this Tuesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, he's the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst. Tyson Nash is going to join us. And then at the top of the next hour, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Rick Peckham, is going to join us here on TSN 1290. Talk about those two teams and their very solid starts to the season. And, of course, all your other regular features, six things we learned this week, etc., etc., etc. But we start with last night's Winnipeg Jets victory over the Detroit Red Wings, a game in which the Winnipeg Jets really controlled the pace of play for the majority of the 60 minutes. I thought they were the better team for the 60 minutes of last night's game, and they were justly rewarded with a 4-2 victory over the Red Wings.
After last night's game, guys, you were hearing a lot of people leave that arena, and they were saying that that was the Jets' best game of the year, and some were even saying that that was one of the best performances at the MTS Center when you consider that that was the Detroit Red Wings' first appearance in Winnipeg since 1996. And to be honest with you, I don't think I would disagree with either of those assertions. The Jets played a full 60-minute game. They really did, and probably the most impressive aspect of last night's game, Dave, for me, was that the Jets had been outplaying the Detroit Red Wings, outshooting them, outplaying them, outworking them in the first period, early on in the second period, and the Jets were able to overcome a one-goal deficit after Danny DeKeyser got that shorthanded goal, and you could really feel a collective sigh at the MTS Center. Everyone knew that the Jets deserved to be winning that game. Jimmy Howard was unbelievable, and the Jets were peppering him with shots. We all know the final shot total was almost 50 shots on Jimmy Howard, and they were able to stick to the game, not get rattled, and we've seen that a lot with this team, that after a couple of goals, the game is over, lights out. We saw that against the Dallas Stars earlier on in the season. And to be honest, we saw that against Chicago just a few days ago. And it was really nice to see this team play that well as a collective group. And you can pick out Mark Scheifele and Michael Frolik and Brian Little and Andrew Ladd, Al Montoya. You can go up and down the roster. There weren't too many players that had bad games. But you can really say that that was a complete effort. As soon as the puck dropped, as soon as Chris Thorburn and Jordan Tutu dropped the gloves, right till the end of the game, you could say that that was their best effort of the year.
That was Tutu fighting Thorburn and Tutu fighting Tutu, isn't that they're both 22,
oh,
which made my head sort of explode in the course of the game there yesterday. You know, I agree with most everything you said there, Ezzy. I think, to me, the Jets certainly controlled the pace of play for the majority of the game. But to me, the TSN turning point there was Pavel Datsyuk with having the three chances in front of the Jets' net where I don't know where the defense was and why nobody picked him up. And by the time he finally put it past Al Montoya, the net was off its moorings. Barely off its moorings, but off its moorings nonetheless. And what very easily could have been a 3-1 Detroit lead was still only 2-1, and the Jets sort of collectively dodged the bullet, because if they go down 3-1, even the way they were controlling the pace of play, I'm not sure that this team is mentally tough enough to come back from a 3-1 deficit against a team like the Detroit Red Wings. But 2-1, they obviously were able to overcome that thanks to Mark Scheifele and his really beautiful pass to Michael Frolik late in the second period.
You know, Drew, I'm
100% in agreement with you, and it just goes to show you how hockey is such a game of bounces and luck sometimes, because the truth is, if that goal goes in, if Pavel Datsyuk actually does score that before the net goes off its moorings, you know, we're probably looking at a different result, unfortunately, for Jets fans. And so, I you know, it was a really, you know, that was, to me, that was the turning point in the game for allowing the Jets to kind of give them that opportunity to say, okay, we're still in this. And they carried the play. It was clear. I mean, the Red Wings, and especially the Red Wings stars, I think I said to Drew at, you know, in the second period, that was kind of the first time I noticed Alfredson. I didn't notice a lot of even Zetterberg and Datsyuk a little bit more so, but like, their stars were not evident last night. The star of the game, without question, if you're a Red Wings fan, is Jimmy Howard. He was lights out phenomenal.
To me, the Red Wings looked like a team, and I'm not taking anything away from the Jets' victory, because they get full marks. But to me, the Red Wings looked like a team that was at the end of a long Western Canadian road trip, who were sort of eager to get back to Detroit, to get back home. And I don't know that they had an extra gear to find in themselves to beat the Jets. Again, not taking anything away from the Jets. You got to play the game on the ice. The Jets deserve full marks for their victory. But the Red Wings, to me, looked like a bit of a tired team last night.
I believe they were on a 4 out of 6 nights, like 4 games in 6
sure,
nights schedule.
So
I mean, it is a tough schedule, but at the same time, like, you know what, it's a professional hockey league game, and you're a professional athlete, so you have to be up for it. You can't be ready to go home. I mean, you know, you have to win the game. It's an important, it's a critical 2 points, and you know, the Jets needed that effort, and they needed that 60-minute effort, and they put it forth.
Right, as far as that being the end of the road trip, those are just excuses, Drew, and I'm saying that, meaning that this is a veteran team. This is a team that had won all of those games, and none of those guys in the dressing room are going to use an excuse,
right.
And having said that, sure, when you're at the end of the road trip, you're probably going to be more tired than you were at the beginning of the road trip. But as far as the Winnipeg Jets go, there were so many positives to come out of this game. It's tough to really begin somewhere, because you had Al Montoya coming in after he relieved Andre Pavlik in the previous game.
And we'll talk about the goaltending question next segment.
Right, and Al Montoya played unbelievably. He made a great save on Steven Weiss. He made a fantastic save on Darren Helm early in the game. And he made several other key saves in the game, and that kept them in it when the Jets were being stymied by Jimmy Howard. But you start with the play of Mark Scheifele, if you want to start there, and you look at the way Andrew Ladd played. I said that on Twitter, and I said that to all three of us in the press box last night. Andrew Ladd, to me, was the one who took over that game, and if you look at early on in that game, he was playing well in all three zones. And a guy like Keaton Ellerbe comes in. I thought he was really good. He's a guy that I really like, and I know that a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, he's going to be a third-pairing defenseman. Well, at this point, they need a third-pairing defenseman, and to be honest with you, I think he's going to be a very good third-pairing defenseman. You can look at it two ways. You can say, well, you know, he was put on waivers by the Florida Panthers. Sorry, he was actually traded for a late pick by the Florida Panthers, but you have to look at it another way.
Then he was put on waivers by the Kings.
LA Kings, but you have to look at it another way. LA Kings are defending Stanley Cup champions, and they pick up Keaton Ellerbe. So an organization like that thinks he's useful. I really like him, and I think he stepped in well, and I thought him and Adam Party did a good job. And once Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart come back, one of those two guys is probably going to be the odd man out. But I thought the Jets overall played good in all three zones, and I think you had the third line that was really the best line in the game, but the other lines weren't bad either.
No, I thought the Jets played a very, picking up on your point, I thought they played a very well-rounded game, and they had all, you know, power play notwithstanding, they had all facets of the game working well. The power play was its usual atrocious self, but they did have, I mean, Brian Little, you know, probably 7 out of 10 times scores on that shot that he had on the nice setup right in front of the net where Jimmy Howard robbed him with the glove save. So, you know, yes, I know it didn't count as a goal, but at least you got to see some offensive pressure and some offensive presence by the power play when a lot of times this year we haven't seen even any sort of, you know, zone entry.
Well, and that was the one thing I was going to say is while the power play was woeful, I mean, it was, they still haven't been able to get a goal 5-on-4 in ages. The truth is that they had control, and they were getting opportunities. And sometimes you come up against a goaltender who's just hot, and Jimmy Howard was hot yesterday. So, I mean, that doesn't mean to say that the Jets didn't have good control during the PP, because I thought they did, also doesn't mean to say they didn't get, opportunities. At the same time, you came up against the hot goalie, and sometimes you're just not going to solve them.
And Dave, when you play like that 5-on-5, You don't really need to score on the power play. And in previous games, the Jets weren't playing that well 5-on-5. Mm-hmm. Well, what I mean is sometimes special teams are a bigger factor in a game. And last night, they didn't need to be excellent on the power play in order to win that game because they were so good 5-on-5. And that's really been why they have been so unsuccessful this year, because they haven't played consistent. They've played well in patches. And they haven't taken the game to the other team. They haven't dictated the pace. The pace is a huge thing in hockey.
Well, and you know, the style of game last night, I thought, suited the Winnipeg Jets. The Detroit Red Wings are not an especially physical, grinded out below the hash marks kind of team. They're a team that's more built on speed, similar to the Winnipeg Jets. So I thought when the Jets play against another team that's built on speed, like the Edmonton Oilers or like the Washington Capitals, that's a game that the Jets are certainly better suited for, because they're a speed team as well. When you play against the Chicago Blackhawks, like we saw on Saturday, like we'll see tomorrow night, when you play against the San Jose Sharks, like we're going to see on Sunday night here at MTS Center, that is not a game that is built for the Winnipeg Jets, because those teams pound you down low. They don't let you have much room to get your wheels going. But last night against the Red Wings, you know, the Jets can skate. So they skated with the Red Wings, and they skated successfully with them.
I agree with that statement, Drew. And I think we're done.
Let's go. Let's go home. As he agreed.
I think when you look at the Detroit Red Wings, they didn't have Brendan Smith. So you had Adam Almquist in the lineup, his first NHL game. And, you know, he wasn't very good. But when you're in your first NHL game on the road, at the end of the road trip, you can't fault him. It wasn't really, you can't pin it on him. And then you look at a guy like Brian Lashoff, who's been an extra defenseman. Jonathan Erickson has been injured as well. So you have two of the top six defensemen for the Red Wings out of the lineup. And, hey, you can look at it the other way and say Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart are out of the lineup, so you're not going to use that as an excuse. But I thought that the Jets did a really good job of pressuring the Detroit Red Wings. Mark Scheifele looked like a guy who was sick of being held off the score sheet. He was really good. Mm-hmm. On the Matt Halaschuk goal, Mark Scheifele got the second assist, but he was the guy that went in there, put pressure on their defense, used his body, and got the puck to Frolik, and then Halaschuk was left in front of the net.
Absolutely.
But hey, we've been talking about this for the last 3 weeks. Mark Scheifele has had trouble at the faceoff circle. He's had trouble being put in that first and second line center role. Maybe part of it has to do with now he's playing on the third line. There's a little bit of pressure, that's now off of him. But, you know, you got to give him credit where it's due. He had an excellent game, and that's why he got the first star. But overall, it's a performance that gives you a lot of hope going into another tough game against the Hawks, because the Jets, really, you don't want to use must win, but when you've lost three in a row, all you're doing after that is compounding the problem. So it was impressive all around.
Absolutely. Can't agree with you more. Tomorrow night, of course, the Jets and the Blackhawks. You can hear that game live on TSN 1290. It's also available national on TSN television. So, you know, we got you covered any way, which way you want. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets goaltending situation. Are you a Montoya man, or are you a Pavlik pal? You're listening to NHL Midweek live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This is being played for Dave Manouk. Is this your request, Dave?
Well, Remus and I were talking, a little Lana Del Rey, a little Summertime Sadness.
This is the second song, I think, of the Jets or not.
It is definitely the second song, because the first song is that new Eminem song.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's Berserk.
Oh, I don't know what it's called.
See, that's remember,
you should just be lucky I know that it's an Eminem song.
No,
really.
But remember on Saturday I was talking about Rick Rubin. That's who produced that song. The legendary producer.
He produced the whole album. Yep. He was on SNL with him Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's got the big beard.
Oh, okay. Things I didn't know. Yeah. Don't really know if I cared to know them, but whatever. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, the goaltending question is
I like how you treaded lightly there.
Well,
you didn't say controversy.
It's not a controversy.
No, it's not.
The goaltending question is front and center among Jets fans, among hockey fans in this fine city and wherever they may be rooting for their Winnipeg Jets. So let's start the conversation. Tomorrow night, Andre Pavlik in Chicago or Al Montoya in Chicago.
Okay, Dave, I've got a question for you here because
there's
I think
no question upon a question. I already asked the question.
Oh, how many questions do I have to answer?
You can answer a question with a question as long as eventually the questions stop.
You can only answer a question with a question if you're like a clergy or a rabbi or something. I think.
Al Montoya has now started three games. Okay,
yes.
He's won two of them. He's got a shutout, a 939 save percentage, and a 1.69 goals against. And anybody can go on NHL.com and read that. The point being, he's played very well. And he played well against the New Jersey Devils, and he played well last night, and he played pretty well in relief of Pavlik against the Chicago Blackhawks. And heading into a rematch with the Chicago Blackhawks, where you have a goalie who's been playing really well versus a goalie who's been struggling as of late, I have to say that I'm not jumping off the Andre Pavlik bandwagon. I'm not throwing losses on Andre Pavlik. But as far as who your starting goaltender should be at the present moment, it's undeniable that you have to go with Al Montoya. You've won with him. Your team has played better in front of him. And you're trying to get wins right now. You're still a couple games under 500. You're trying to get wins. And this isn't Al Montoya versus Andre Pavlik, who's better. Right now, when you need wins early on in the season, you got to go with the hot goaltender. And that's why I applaud Gary Lawless for writing the column in the Free Press, because he's right. All good teams will dress the best players, the players that give them the best chance to win. And right now, and this might change. I mean, if Al Montoya starts to struggle, then you got to go back to Pavlik. And sure, Pavlik's got 4 years left on his contract. He's making $4 million a year. But right now, that's a moot point, Dave. You got to go with the hot hand, the hot goalie. Right now, that's Montoya.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Drew didn't use the word controversy, but it was interesting in today's morning papers.
It's got too many syllables for me.
Sorry. the every scribe who pens about the Jets was talking about Montoya starting on Wednesday. So it leads you to believe there's a little smoke, there's a little fire. People are talking about it because they know, look, when you have a performance like that and when the team plays as well as they do before in front of you, then there's something to it. And so why is it? Why is the team play more confident in front of Montoya than they might in front of Pavlik? And obviously there could be various reasons for it, but the point is that there's something there, and you know, we were in the dressing room yesterday and post game, and Al Montoya wouldn't answer whether he wanted to play on Wednesday or not. And now it's clear, by the way, that
he wants to play.
No, obviously
every player wants to play.
First of all, he wants to play for a number of reasons. Number one, he wants to play because he's the starting. He wants to be a goalie.
Right.
You know, wants to be a number one goalie in the league. Nobody wants to be the backup. Everybody wants to be the starter.
He wants to play for another contract.
Well, there's that. But the other thing is also he's from Chicago. His family goes back there every summer.
Good point.
So you know, he already said that there's going to be a lot of family and friends that are going to be in the crowd. Now that's not a reason to start someone. You don't start someone just because
that's personal motivation
for
him.
You know what?
That's a good point.
I disagree with you that I don't really disagree with you that seriously, but I mean, I think a lot of coaches nowadays, the reason Carter Hutton started here the first time as the Predators, I mean, part of the reason for that was because he's from nearby Thunder Bay and a lot of friends and family.
Well, they also were on a back-to-back.
I know they were on a back-to-back, too, but they could have started Carter Hutton, Montreal, and Pekka Rinne here.
Sure.
I mean,
that's a good point. I think
that for a coach, especially to a coach who wants to be, you know, those little things go, I think, a decent length in the dressing room. So, but I don't think that's going to factor into Noel's decision tomorrow. Here's why I think you start Montoya tomorrow. Right now, Pavlik's obviously his confidence is not high right now based on the way he's been playing lately. He's struggling. If you send him into Chicago tomorrow and you throw him to the Wolves again after he just got lit up by the Blackhawks, and let's say he gets lit up again, it's 3-0 or 4-0 in the second period, and you have to yank him again. And he gets yanked for the second time in two starts. What does that do for his confidence? What does that do for his long-term mental health on this team? Meanwhile, if Montoya starts and Montoya plays well again, it's like Richard talked about, I believe, on the show on midweek last week. He said you're better off having two sort of average goaltenders fighting it out, competing, fighting tooth and nail for the job, rather than one average goaltender and one clear backup. There's nobody pushing him. I think if Montoya plays well and starts to make, you know, maybe Pavlik starts to feel as though he's getting pushed from behind, and as a result, he picks up his game, you know, next time he gets back in, whether it's Friday against Nashville or Sunday against the San Jose Sharks.
I think all your points are bang on again, and I know this is two segments where I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, but I do agree with what you're saying, and Gary, in his column, I go back to it, and he said that, well, what does it do? What does it say to the other players on the Jets when you go out there and nobody that was at that game or watching that game on TSN Jets didn't think that Montoya played amazing? I mean, I didn't hear, all I heard was Montoya was great last night. He gave the Jets a chance to win. Everybody saw that highlight reel save against Steven Weiss. He made other good saves. I mentioned the Darren Helm one when it was a 2-on-0. He was excellent. So what does that say to the other players on the team when he plays excellent and then he doesn't get to start again?
I agree with you.
You have to start him based on merit. And Andre Pavlik, I think, doesn't have anything to be worried about as far as getting the majority of the starts this year. I would be surprised if he still doesn't start the majority of the games. But I think that at this point, he has to watch Montoya play, and he has to kind of acquiesce to the goalie who's playing better at this moment.
If Al Montoya plays his way into 25 or 30 starts this year because he's playing that well, and Pavlik only gets 50 starts or something like that because he picks up his game as well to match Montoya's game, I don't see how that can be a bad thing for the Winnipeg Jets.
No, fans are looking for, you know, I mean, Pavlik always has umbrage, you know, when anybody asks him about his numbers and whether he's tired and whether he plays too much. And the fact of the matter is he has played too much in the past,
yep,
and they've ridden him too hard. And you can say, oh, well, he gets rest. Well, the reality is, you can clearly see that there's a weariness in his game sometimes. And so if the Jets have to have a reliable backup who, as you said, Drew, and you're right, is pushing Pavlik. Like, there's no, Pavlik isn't a king. He's not on a throne. This is not his,
right,
this is not his number one position because,
right,
he signed a long-term, or as he said that, a long-term contract worth big money. At the end of the day, it's who's going to get you the,
right,
wins. Because that's, let's be realistic. And again, this is where you have the two warring factions. You've got long-term versus short-term. Coach Noel doesn't care what's going to happen to this team potentially in 7 years, but he cares what's happening right now.
Sure. Right.
He needs wins, and that's what matters.
He's playing for his job.
Correct.
He's coaching for his job.
And so the fact is, if Montoya is the guy who's going to give you that win tomorrow night, then you go with Montoya. And,
right,
then you can come back with Pavlik, like Ezzy says, on Friday night against Nashville.
Andre Pavlik is 26 years old. He's an adult. He understands that Montoya's playing right now. He's not going to be, you know, sulking on the bench at this point. That's not what it's about. It's about giving a guy who deserves the start. Really, that's what it's about.
It's funny. And, you know, I remember when the Jets signed Montoya, and I was talking to Arthur Staple, our friend. He covers,
yep,
the New York Islanders for Newsday, and obviously he's familiar with Montoya because that's where the Jets, you know, he was a free agent after,
yep,
leaving the Isles. And he said that Montoya is a goalie who, as a goalie, plays better the more often he plays. If he gets on a roll, if he wins one game and it snowballs, he tends to improve his game and pick his game up.
And that's so, how logical is that?
Well, it makes sense. If you're not, I mean, some backup goalies can come in and steal you, you know, a game here and a game there. But if Al Montoya can get on a roll, it's not a bad thing whatsoever for the Winnipeg Jets. But if he struggles tomorrow against the Blackhawks, I also don't think it's necessarily, I mean, it's obviously bad for the Jets in terms of that, you know, the one game scenario, and that, you know, if he struggles, they'd likely lose the game. But Pavlik would then be able to come back into the net on Friday. He hasn't had any more of his confidence shell-shocked by giving up, you know, having two bad games in a row. And maybe by sitting back and having, you know, almost a whole week off, he's able then to, you know, to see the game a little bit better and to pick up his game as a result.
So the question I have for you, Ez, is let's say Montoya comes in and steals another game tomorrow. Do you start him on Friday?
Absolutely. You have to start the goalie who is hotter. And that goes back to what we were saying before. It goes back to Gary's column. It goes back to what Drew said. And it goes back to what you said, Dave. You can't just look at who has the longer-term contract or who has that title of number one goaltender. And it's the guy that is giving you the best chance right now. And by the way, guys, this is a good thing. This is a very good thing for the Jets that they have a backup that they know that they can put in when Pavlik is struggling. And again, you know, this segment is not about, you know, throwing Andre Pavlik under the bus. I really like Andre Pavlik as a person and as a player. And I think he's had a couple of bad games. Let's not forget, guys, earlier on in the season,
yeah,
he was very good.
Sure.
And he kept the Jets in those games early on when they won those couple of games, 5-3, 5-4 against, it was the Ducks and who was it, the Oilers or the Kings. He kept those games low scoring, and he's had a couple of bad games. Luckily, Montoya's come in. He's played well. So let's see what happens moving forward.
Right. It's not like Pavlik has had the 1970s Montreal Canadiens defense in front of him. So, you know, it is worth noting that the Jets defense isn't very good and defensive systems aren't very good. But a goaltending controversy or two goaltenders playing well is not a bad thing for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's go to break. When we come back, Tyson Nash, he covers the Phoenix Coyotes for Fox Sports Arizona, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek. He covers the Phoenix Coyotes for Fox Sports Arizona, Tyson Nash. Tyson, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, boys. It's a little loud here at the Javelin.com Arena. I hope that you can hear okay.
A-OK so far. We'll let you know if that changes, but right now we got you loud and clear.
All right, sounds good.
Tyson, before we get to the Coyotes really on the ice, we have to ask, and I promise you this is the only question we're going to ask about ownership, but do you think the stability that the Coyotes now have in the ownership department, you know, has played an impact on the Coyotes' performance thus far this season?
Well, yeah, I do. I think, obviously, there's a big relief. I know how I feel personally. I'm not even the guy going out there on the ice. So you can imagine how a guy like Shane Doan and Dave Tippett and Don Maloney are feeling, just having that weight lifted off of their backs. And more importantly, now you can go out as a general manager and run your team like every other team in the National Hockey League. You can bring in free agents. And we all know Phoenix is a hot spot. Everyone wants to play here just because of the weather and just what Phoenix offers, and not to mention a pretty darn good hockey club on the ice with a pretty good coach in Dave Tippett. So it's been great. The owners are just—they're so passionate about hockey. They're all Canadian guys, very successful in their own rights, obviously, and it's showing here on the business side here in Phoenix. So things are only going to get better.
Tyson, you've probably heard this more than anybody, probably, with maybe the exception of the players and Dave Tippett himself, but we've heard this for years now, that the Coyotes are all about low-scoring games and playing very tight defensively. But this year, actually, the Phoenix Coyotes are leading the Western Conference in goals for, and they're towards the bottom in goals against. Are they playing any type of different style of hockey this season, or is this just something that we can chalk up to it's a little bit early and things are going to, you know, equal themselves out as the season goes along?
Well, you know, from a broadcasting standpoint, I can tell you what, it's a breath of fresh air. It's nice to call some goals. We've got some exciting games, high-scoring games. I don't think that's how Dave Tippett, typically wants his hockey club to play, but that being said, the good thing is that years past, under Dave Tippett, this team had one way to play and one way to play in order to win. They didn't play that way. They didn't win hockey games. This year, they're not playing, you know, as good systematically and to their identity, but they're still finding ways to win, which is good news. They're getting a ton of offense from their blue line. I think they lead the National Hockey League in goals and points from their blue liners, so that's always a positive. They still like to get a little bit more scoring up front from guys like Mike Ribeiro and Shane Doan and Lori Korpikoski, some of the secondary scoring guys. But it's been a real nice surprise here to see what this team has done offensively.
Tyson, you just mentioned Mike Ribeiro, and he was the Coyotes' big offseason acquisition. How has he fit in with the Coyotes since arriving in Phoenix?
He's been great. He's been really, really good. He had a stretch there where he had a boatload of points. He's got five goals. I think he's got a couple game winners in there as well. So this is a guy that, you know, sometimes you don't notice him a whole lot throughout the game, and you're like, man, we haven't said his name all night long. And then all of a sudden, boom, he gets the game-winning goal, or he sets up the game-winning goal. I mean, that's just how this guy plays. He's very, very sneaky, but very dangerous. And, I think you'd love to see the team have a couple more of those guys just to make it that much easier to play. And when you talk to guys like Shane Dillon, that's what he said. He said he simplifies the game. He makes it easy for me. He makes it so I don't have to go into the corner, run somebody over, take the puck and drag a defenseman with me and try to score. Now it's just get open and maybe get a backdoor tap in. That's nice for the player.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Tyson Nash. He's the Phoenix Coyotes color analyst on Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, you mentioned the offense that the Coyotes have been getting from their back end. They have three defensemen in the top 10 of defensemen scoring in the NHL. Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Keith Yandle each have 11 points. Derek Morris has 10 points. Is there any concern among the Coyotes that, you know, the defense cannot continue to score at this pace? And if and when they slow down, the Coyotes' offense may slow down along with the defensemen?
Well, I think, you know, that's obviously to be expected. They're not going to carry on at this pace. You know, at least Derek Morris, I wouldn't think. Keith Yandle and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're going to see them at the top of the list at the end of the year for defensemen. Keith Yandle led the team last year in point as a defenseman with 30. So very offensive-minded, but I think at the end of the day that they want to keep continuing to get better in how they play defensively. I think the last three games they've allowed more than 40 shots. The other night against San Jose, they allowed 50 shots. So that's way too much rubber for Mike Smith to face. He's faced more shots than any other goaltender this year with 388. That's unacceptable for a Dave Tippett-type system. So as the scoring slows down, hopefully the defense increases, and then they start just winning hockey games like they've done in the past, 2-1, 3-2. That's more of their style.
Tyson, sticking with the defenseman, Drew asked you about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I think a lot of people outside of Phoenix who don't watch the Coyotes play, they don't realize how good he is. He's almost a guy who's a borderline Norris candidate, and he's so well in the way he skates, and he averages over 25 minutes of ice time. And we were talking about this last week on our Saturday show about how good he's going to be for Sweden at the Olympics. He's going to be a key part of that team. For our audience who doesn't see him play that much, what does he do for the Coyotes that makes him so valuable?
Well, he, you know, I played against Lidstrom for a long time, and it's not even fair to make this comparison, but he's a poor man's Nicholas Lidstrom. He's a young kid, but he plays the game similar to how Lidstrom played, in the fact that, you know, the game plan is to go out there, make him pay every shift, finish your checks on him. Well, I tried doing it for 9 years. I couldn't hit the guy. Well, I think I got one hit on him in my entire career just because he outthinks you. You know, he anticipates the play. He's so efficient the way he skates, you know, the way he moves the puck. I mean, all those things. He's just, his hockey IQ is second to none. So this is a guy who plays against the other team's top line. I think he's averaging over 25 minutes a night. He's good on the PP, and he's only going to get better. That's the good thing. They're just scratching the surface with this kid. So it's been fun to watch him evolve as a player.
This is TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And we're joined by Tyson Nash. He's the Phoenix Coyotes analyst on Fox Sports Arizona.
Tyson, up front, Mikael Bodker with 11 points in 15 games is averaging slightly less than a point per game this season. Is this the season that the former 8th overall pick in 2008 breaks out offensively for the Coyotes?
Well, they sure hope so. You know, we've seen spurts of it over the years. I think 2 years ago, he really started to come out in the playoffs against Chicago Blackhawks. He had a couple overtime game winners. You know, he's not a big guy, but he's real wide. He's real thick. He skates as good as anyone in the National Hockey League. He's very explosive. I think he's starting to shoot the puck more, and that's what makes him effective. He can back defense. The defenseman off with his speed. He's a scary guy to defend against. You know, I just think that he's a guy that's left you on the edge of your seat. Every night you're like, man, that fella, what a game he had. But then you look on the score sheet and he's got nothing to show for it. So it's nice that he's finally getting rewarded. But I still think he can play a lot better. That's the good thing.
Tyson, we were talking about the Phoenix Coyotes earlier and how they like to keep the games lower scoring, even though they've been scoring at a better pace than they were in previous years. And you look at the top 50 scorers, and Radim Verbat is the only guy that's in the top 50 right now. We expect Mike Ribeiro probably to be a little bit higher up there based on where he was last year. But is this a concern at all for Dave Tippett and the coaching staff that they don't necessarily have a guy that can take over a game individually? Or is that not a concern, and they think that they can be a successful team going into the playoffs, scoring by the committee approach.
Well, that's how it's worked in the past. I don't see why this year would be any different, quite frankly. I mean, you look at teams that have that one real powerful top line, and that's an easy team to play because you just go out there and defend against that top line. Like tonight, for instance, you got the top line with Kessler and the two Sedins. Yeah, they're getting a little secondary scoring out of their second unit, but if you shut down that top line, I like your chances. I mean, you're not going to shut them down, but if you can limit those chances, let me rephrase that. So, you know, I think that's the game plan. It's always been by committee for this Phoenix Coyotes team, and that's why this team is fun to play on when you talk to the players, because everyone has a very important role and something to take pride in. I think when you just count on one or two guys, that's not a fun team to play on because you're waiting for them to do it all the time. So it's going to be an interesting game here tonight. As I mentioned, the key will be shutting down that top line.
Tyson, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned Mike Smith and the amount of pucks that he's faced so far this season for the Coyotes. You know, he's been talked about as a potential goaltender for Team Canada at the upcoming Sochi Olympics. Have you noticed any change in Mike Smith or in any of the Coyotes players that are being talked about as potentially representing their countries in Sochi?
Well, he's getting better. That's all I know, and that's the important thing. I think at the start of the year, he struggled a little bit. He was fighting it, like I think a lot of players coming out of training camp. But right now, I don't think he's feeling the pressure, if that's what you're asking. I think, I think a guy that, you know, has been in the conversation, I think that just gets you that much more pumped up, and I think it brings out the best in you, and I think that's what's happening lately. From Mike Smith, he's starting to play good. He had by far his best performance the other night against the Sharks with 48 saves in that one. So tonight, again, will be another test. We're going to see these two guys, Luongo and Smith, go at it head-to-head for, as you mentioned, bragging rights for the short term.
And Tyson, Mike Smith must feel pretty good because he's the only goaltender who scored a goal this year. So he must think his chances are pretty good right now, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I think someone said at one point, I think a couple weeks ago, he had more goals than 288 players in the National Hockey League. So that's saying something, I'd say.
He's a sniper. Tyson Nash covers the Phoenix Coyotes for Fox Sports Arizona. Tyson, thanks very much for doing this. Enjoy tonight's Canucks Coyotes game.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care,
thanks a lot,
Tyson. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Ezra Ginsberg, looking dapper as always. Dave Minuk sporting the latest in athletic wear. What is that, a hoodie and then track pants?
That's a little bit of Lululemon wear, no big deal.
Dave makes, like, anything look good. You know, that's just the way Dave is.
I'll tell you what, Dave does... The loving has got to end.
There's no, like, good days and bad days for Dave. Every day is a great day.
Wow. I agree with Drew. Ezra, you got to chill.
Yeah, I probably have
to. You actually are looking pretty good. I just saw your shirt now.
Oh, now the Love Fest is a new Love Fest is emerging.
We've been on air for almost an hour. Remus is like, oh, Ez is here. He wakes up.
Yeah. You were wearing a jacket before. Now I can see your nice shirt. You look
a little rocking the red plaid.
That's right.
It is quite
good. You know, plaid is, I don't care what anybody says, plaid is never going out of style.
I have many plaid outfits.
It's like one of those things that just...
I have just full suits of plaid.
Yeah.
I'm in constant plaid.
You actually
the Scottish tuxedo.
Yeah.
Drew has a great corduroy jacket.
It's true.
Corduroy is a really underrated material.
That is a good jacket. I do agree with you. Yeah. Let's talk about the NHL not suspending. We spoke about the fight on Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But after IC ended and between that, then and now, the NHL has come out and said that they're not suspending Ray Emery for the fight versus Braden Holtby. Never mind the fact that now you have Brendan Shanahan and Bill Daly and Gary Bettman doing the media rounds saying how much they hated what happened in Philadelphia. But the concept that they couldn't suspend Ray Emery because what he did is not in the rule book is such utter nonsense.
Right.
And such an utter cop-out. Because somebody remind me where in the rule book it says you're not allowed to talk about Alicia Cuthbert, you know, and yet they still managed to suspend Sean Avery when he spoke, when he said what he said in front of the television cameras, right, however many years ago.
Right.
The NHL are so two-faced when it comes to this fighting and when it comes to this goalie fight between Ray Emery and Braden Holtby that it's absolutely ridiculous. On one hand, well, we'd love to punish it, but we can't because, you know, it's not explicitly said in the rule book that Ray Emery is not allowed to skate the length of the ice and commit an on-ice assault against a fellow goaltender. But on the other hand, they're like, oh, well, we hate this. Oh, my, do we hate it. I mean, they are so two-faced with it, they could be a Batman villain.
And what I think is probably the most unfortunate aspect of the Ray Emery, Braden Holtby, Flyers, Capitals brawl is that I actually think the NHL Department of Player Safety has done an excellent job to date. If you look at the John Scott suspension or the Patrick Kaleta suspensions, I think that giving Patrick Kaleta 10 games and giving John Scott 7 games for their thuggery was bang on. And I think they had an opportunity here. Okay, let's look at the facts here, okay? The Philadelphia Flyers were out of the game. The game was over. Game over. 7-0. Second period, intermission. They're in the dressing room. They know the game's over. They're frustrated. You know, we've been told Paul Holmgren comes into the dressing room. He reams them out. So they're out there. They're thinking, they were mad. The Philadelphia Flyers were mad. And this is the same team, Dave, that was the Broad Street Bullies in the 1970s. It's the same team that had Ron Hextall in the late 1980s. So this is a team that isn't afraid to go out there and chuck a couple knuckles, okay? The problem is, what Ray Emery did, you can't defend that. I mean, Braden Holtby, the guy starts fighting, and the fact of the matter is, Ray Emery is probably the toughest goaltender in the NHL. As far as a guy you don't want to fight. And remember back in the day when he was with the Ottawa Senators, he fought two guys.
Yeah.
And Andrew Peters was one of the guys. And so he's tough enough that he can actually fight players that aren't goalies, actual tough guys. So Ray Emery's a tough guy. Ray Emery crossed the line, okay? And again, I don't think Ray Emery should have been suspended for 10 games. He got 29 penalty minutes in the game. Ray Emery probably deserved a couple of game suspension because he broke the code. And for those who are familiar with fighting and hockey at any level, the code is if you don't have your hands up to defend yourself, you don't punch the guy. So if he's on the ice and he's defenseless, don't punch the guy. It's the same rules in boxing and UFC. And he broke that code. And it was wrong, and the NHL had the opportunity to suspend it. Now, having said that, Dave, I think this whole notion, and I wanted to bring this up, this whole Gary, you know, broke the news on Twitter yesterday, I believe it was, this whole notion that if two goalies fight, they should get 5 or 10 games, I think is completely missing the point.
What you're talking about is the NHL, the general managers meetings that are coming up, I'm sure somewhere in a nice warm climate. They never seem to be in Edmonton in February.
It's either Boca Raton or Scottsdale.
Or Phoenix or Palm Springs or whatever it is. The NHL general managers are considering implementing a rule that says that if a goaltender crosses the red line,
right,
it's an automatic 5 or 10 game suspension, much like it is an automatic suspension if a player leaves the bench to join a fight.
Right, and I think that's taking it too far because if you're going to do that, then you have to start suspending players for fighting. Really, I think this isn't the place or the time to start implementing that. I think what happened was a goalie was punching a guy who was defenseless, and it was an individual thing. We don't see goalie fights very often. Goalie fights are very rare. I'm not saying, I know some people don't like them. I don't mind them. I mean, most of the time, no one gets hurt.
That wasn't a goalie fight. That was an assault on the ice.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But most of the time, when two goalies fight, that doesn't happen. Guys punch each other for a minute, and it's over. What Ray Emery did, he should have been suspended for a couple games. It was an individual. He has to take that responsibility individually.
Of course, he should have been suspended. But and you know, Ray Emery did what Ray Emery does. So that, you know, I can take it or leave it from Ray Emery's perspective. But don't for a second have the NHL come out and say, "Well, we hate it, but what could we do to stop it? What could we
do?"
So
Drew, I have a question for you. Okay.
Okay.
If the NHL doesn't even suspend Emery for doing that,
yeah,
then they're going to suspend guys 5 or 10 games for crossing the red line.
You know,
there's a disconnect there.
There's a disconnect because they're full of it. They could have suspended Ray Emery, you know, for the same, under whatever clause they used to suspend Sean Avery.
Well, you know what, and Drew, I looked it up, and it's they suspended him for conduct detrimental to the league or the game of hockey.
And you think that what Ray Emery did is not detrimental to the league or hockey?
No, absolutely. I mean, the truth is that if it's that loose, if there's no, if it's that gray, the area of that they're using as their legal basis for a suspension, then there's no question that they could have done the same thing to Emery. I mean, he's, you know, this is clearly, unfortunately, the NHL's rule. I understand what Ezzy's saying. It's just reactionary. It seems like they're just trying to, you know, make it, you know, it's a very public, it's just, they just want to show the public, look, we're trying to make better, so we're going to do this. Right. But realistically, what is this doing? I mean, it's just, it doesn't really seem to be solving the problem. If you want to get rid of hockey, fighting in hockey, get rid of fighting in hockey. But to somehow make a distinction between the goalies because you had one completely disproportionate fight makes no sense.
This goes back to what we've talked about this year and in previous years. The NHL doesn't want to get rid of fighting because the players want it in the game. The general managers want it in the game, and the fans want it in the game.
Nobody wanted that in the game.
No, and I agree. And this is the problem. We've talked about it ad nauseum, and the problem is when a guy gets injured, that's the problem. So when I defend fighting in hockey because it's part of the game and it's in there to protect the players from themselves, the negative byproduct of that is that guys get injured. And stuff like this happens. And so,
in any other walk of life, what you saw on Friday in Philadelphia would have been considered an assault.
Yep.
And it was not
no different than Todd Bertuzzi and Steve Moore.
Yeah. I mean, I can probably make a little bit of a distinction, but if the NHL wanted to treat it in a similar manner, I would be okay with it.
It's a suspendable offense.
Absolutely.
Well, it also becomes more problematic when you, if you know, Ray Emery, there was always this, you know, he was training in boxing.
Yeah.
But that becomes a little bit more of a distinction, right? Because then you actually become more of a lethal weapon as opposed to someone who's just, you know, a little bit of a pugilist in, you know, and wants to kind of let it, you know, and you fight a little bit. But like, if you're you're trained as a boxer, you know how to fight, and you're going up against someone who doesn't, and you know, you're going for a tussle. I mean, it just doesn't, it's disproportionate.
Right. And I guess the question is, are Andre Pavlik and Al Montoya going to have to take boxing lessons because Philly's in town next week?
Yeah, Philly's in town and we play the Jets twice.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. But
before we start getting tweets and all of that, that was a joke.
Yes, it was.
It's not a funny joke.
But I'll tell you what. If I think most Jets fans, if the Jets have a 7-0 lead against Philadelphia, most Jets fans will take a fight breaking out between the goaltenders at that point in time because the Jets will be up 7-0.
Well, at the end of the day, the fans love it though. That's the thing. They don't like. Again, they don't want an assault, but when the goalies fight, everybody loves it. Well, they had Chris Osgood on H&L.
The fans in Philadelphia,
they love that.
The fans in Philadelphia would have loved just as much for their team to win 5-1 as they loved the fact that their team lost 7-0.
I got to tell you, yesterday when Tutu and Thorburn were dropping the gloves right to start off the game, every fan was on his feet or her feet, and they were chanting. Look, you can say you don't like it, but the fact of the matter is, 15,000 people were jumping up and applauding it. Yeah. So I mean, like,
and how much impact did that fight have on the course?
I'm not suggesting it had any. Okay. I'm stating a fact that
we're getting off the topic.
Dave likes to stick to the facts.
I know. We're getting off the topic, which is, I think that we can agree that for the NHL to claim there's nothing in the rule book to prevent them that prevents them from suspending Ray Emery is utter nonsense. If you want to take any positive out of it, there's this tweet from Pat Sajak. Taking a cue from the @NHL, I'm planning to jump Alex Trebek and pummel him in an effort to fire up my staff and prove my manhood.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Pat Sajak, of course, a huge Washington Capitals fan. We remember the first year he was here. He was here with his
big
son.
Big Vanna White fan, too.
So are you. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 7 p.m. here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Dave Manuk, sporting a New York Mets hat. Why the New York Mets? Just like the hat or like the team?
We
were in New York.
We were in New York for the draft, but that wasn't the reason.
And a Mets game.
And we were at a Mets game as well. Yeah. But, you know, I'm an equal opportunity hat buyer. I like hats, so I just buy
hats
based on.
You like.
Yeah, I do. I'm not based on the team. I just base. I'm a big hat guy.
You know, I know this because I'm a close personal friend of Dave's.
Oh, for God's
but
sake.
He has an extensive hat collection.
That is true. Like,
said that. I'm not. Oh.
You don't have to be a close personal friend to.
Well, I mean,
know
I'm,
that.
I'm saying
he just
he
said
has,
it on air five
well, that's,
seconds
that's,
ago.
That's true, but he has.
I think what he's saying is
he has,
my closet.
He has a lot
has.
Of nice hats, like lots, and I'm the type of guy that I buy a hat and then I wear it until it basically. You know, can't be worn. Yeah, so it disintegrates. But Dave, you know, wears like a different hat every day of the week. And so, by the way, the Illegal Curve hat, we've just got a fresh shipment of Illegal Curve toques.
Yes.
The hats, though, those are becoming almost a collector's item.
Yeah.
We've only got a few left.
Speaking of the toques, though, we do have toques to go out to our winners of our IC game-winning goal and IC 50-50 contest. So don't worry, we haven't forgotten you. The toques are on their way. We were a little delayed in getting them. They were on back order. So.
Right.
I got to say.
The elves in the Illegal Curve lab took a little bit longer.
They were up north.
They were on strike.
I got to say, because I know we're hard at work getting Rick Peckham of the Tampa Bay Lightning broadcast on right now. I got to say, one of the coolest things about doing this radio show is when people tweet us from New York or from Calgary and they're wearing an Illegal Curve toque. It's really neat, and people appreciate it. So I just and Dave deserves a lot of credit because he does all of that for us. So it's great to see people enjoying them.
Don't worry, you got your contractually obligated compliment to Dave Mnookin.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man on Sun Sports, Rick Peckham. Rick, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to be on your show again.
Thank you, Rick. Rick, we got to start with the Lightning and their on-ice performance. They're currently in second place in the Eastern Conference. They're 10-4 in their first 14 games. You know, what has head coach John Cooper done to get his team playing so well this early on in the season?
Well, he coached the team at the end of the season last year, last 15 games. Wasn't really able to lay much of a groundwork at that point, more of an observation of what he was seeing and what kind of team that he had and the guys he could deal with. I think that you look at the vast majority of the players on the team this year, 8 or 9 of them, I believe, played for him in the minor leagues in Norfolk and Syracuse. And they won a Calder Cup championship in 2012 in Norfolk and reached the finals last year. And they were the best team in the American League at the time that Cooper got hired. So they know how he wants to play. And I think they've helped to get that culture instituted. I think that the veterans have gone along well. And I think that this is a team that's, you know, they're not taking a backward step to anybody they're playing. They've played a very tough schedule, and as you point out, 10-4 is a very good record at this stage of the season. So I just think they've been able to meet the challenges that they face so far on the schedule.
Rick, Ben Bishop has been excellent so far this year, posting a record of 9-2 with a 2.15 GA and a .925 save percentage. Is last year's trade with the Senators starting to look like a real steal for GM Steve Yzerman?
I don't know about a steal, but I think that Bishop has played very, very well, and that's been a big part of the success. It's, you know, you can chalk up a lot of it to, you know, how the team has adjusted to how Cooper wants to play, and obviously Steven Stamkos, Marty St. Louis off to great starts again. But as we know, the last couple of years, they've really lacked that consistent goaltending, and Bishop, to this point, has given them a tremendous performance and goal to start the season. He stole a game in Chicago in game number 2, actually the first win for the Lightning in a come-from-behind effort against the Blackhawks early in the season, and he's had a couple of games where he's been able to, you know, be the difference in winning a game, and they just haven't had that kind of performance and goal the last three years, and Bishop starting to give them that. So they're hoping that it's all working out, that he's been projected to be a number one goalie, I think, early in his career and is living up to that promise to this point.
Rick, Valtteri Filppula was a big offseason acquisition for Steve Yzerman and the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's playing on the second line, centering the second line. But you know, he's been off to a good start, but there were questions about if he could replace Vincent LeCavalier and if he was going to make this team better, and he's been pretty good so far. How would you rate his play thus far this year?
He's been excellent because he's been put in a lot of different situations, and he's brought a lot of veteran savvy as well as a tremendous level of skill, which you don't necessarily appreciate unless you watch the Red Wings on a frequent basis these last few years. I mean, you think of the Red Wings, you're thinking of Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Franz, and players like that, Nick Lidstrom until he retired, and with good reason. And Filippula was kind of down the list in terms of you know, recognizable talents on that team. But he's a very skilled guy, very sly and creative with a puck. I think he's fit in well with Teddy Purcell. He's been a very good player in the power play. He's also been a very good penalty killer as well, good on faceoffs. In any situation he's been put in, he's been very good. Now, 14 games in, I would say that really in terms of can he replace Vincent LeCavalier, that's kind of been forgotten about because he's a different player and he brings a different skill set. And I think his versatility has fit what they want to do with his team very, very well. So I think it's the Vinny era has kind of gone by the boards, and they're well on the way of in the process of creating a new identity here.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Rick Peckham. He's the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning on Sun Sports. Now, Rick, probably one of the best things a young player can ever hear is you're going to go play with Steven Stamkos and Martin St. Louis. So far this year, that responsibility has fallen to 24-year-old Alex Killorn. You know, what about his game has been most complimentary to Martin St. Louis and Steven Stamkos?
Well, with Ryan Malone starting on that line the first few games, Killorn's a better skater. He's faster, and I think that that speed factor, allowing him to keep up with St. Louis and Stamkos, I think has made a big difference on that line. Killorn's a very smart player. He's a Harvard grad, which you know, tells you the smart kid anyway. But in terms of his hockey sense and the fact that he is 24, he's not a real experienced NHL player, but he's a little older than most of the kids that come into the league because of that four-year college experience at Harvard. He's a guy that just fits in on any line and any role that John Cooper assigns him, whether he's been in a checking role, he can handle that. He's generally been, in the time that he was with the Lightning last year for 22 games, actually I think a little more than that. I think he was here for all of the 10 games of the season, mostly in a second-line situation. And finding success with St. Louis and Stamkos, and I think the message to Alex Killorn was, don't hurt yourself with trying to set up Marty and Stammer all the time. You know, just play the game. He's a guy who's more of a shoot-first type of player rather than, you know, a playmaker like Valtteri Filppula or Teddy Purcell. And I think that serves him well with Stamkos and St. Louis. And it adds a little different dimension than maybe they've had on that line. And so far it's working very well.
Rick, along with goaltending, the weakness of this team has traditionally been on defense. What have John Cooper and the rest of his coaching staff done to improve this area?
Well, I think they've gone to a more traditional defensive style of play, and I think a lot more responsibility has been placed on the shoulders of the forwards to come back and help. There's a real pressure on these guys to have support anywhere in the ice with the puck. So a defenseman who ends up in the corner in his own zone, he's usually got a forward close by. Centerman's always circling back in deep. It's certainly much more of a team effort in coming out of the zone, and no longer is a defenseman standing there looking at two forecheckers trying to figure out how he's going to get that pass through them to the guy who's waving a stick at center ice wondering why he isn't getting the pass. You know, they're all coming out together. It's a more cohesive effort, really, from the forwards as well as the defenseman from the defensive zone, and that's made a big difference. The coverage is a little more traditional. I think that Guy Boucher had a system where they would, you know, pressure in the corners and along the boards on the sides of the ice where they would you know, load up on one side of the ice, and you'd have maybe a centerman of a Steven Stamkos or LeCavalier given the responsibility of covering the front of the net. That was kind of risky. They've gone in much more of a traditional type of coverage, and I think that just plays well with this group of defensemen. I think they can play to their strengths, and you've got three veterans and Brewer, Salo, and Matt Carl, each on a different pair with young players like Rad Kukutis and Andre Schuster. Victor Hedman, obviously, is a little bit more experienced. But the balance has been very, very good, and I think that's what Steve Yzerman thought, a defensive unit by committee, and that's what he's getting.
This is TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca. You're listening to NHL Midweek with The Legal Curve, and we're joined by Rick Peckham. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man on Sun Sports.
Rick, we've talked about the top two forward lines. I wanted to talk to you about the third forward line, because Tyler Johnson is a guy that has impressed me in the couple of times that I've watched the Lightning play. He scored three goals, and he's been playing with Andre Palat, and Brett Connolly now has been recalled from the AHL. But how nice has it been for the Lightning to have production from that third line? Because I know that last year they were lacking production from their third and fourth lines.
Yeah, that could be very big over the long haul. That line with Andre Palat, Richard Ponick, and Tyler Johnson. In training camp, it was obvious in just about all the preseason games, that was the best line on the ice for either team because they were so cohesive. They played together for a year and a half in the minor leagues. And 2 years ago when the team won the Calder Cup Championship in Norfolk, I think a lot of people in the hockey world were alerted to what was going on with that team. Earlier in the season, they started a 28-game winning streak that extended well into the playoffs and set a new pro hockey record for consecutive games won. And really, that streak started back in January, I believe it was, of that season when Cooper put those three guys together. They just gelled, and he kept them together all through that streak. And I think they were... You know, if he put them together in training camp and they were clicking, it was pretty evident that they were all going to make the team because they played so well together. They've since been broken up in the last few games where Ponick has been dropped to the fourth line. And as you mentioned, Brent Connolly coming up, he's been seeing some action there. And he knew both players in the time that he was in the minor leagues. He played most of his last year in Syracuse. So Palat is a guy who... You watch over the course of about 10 games, you really start to appreciate him. He's not very big. He's 190 pounds. He's not small, but he's not big. Plays bigger than that. Fearless. Really goes to any area of the ice he needs to. Very, very smart and responsible defensively. And he's got some skill to score some goals and set some people up. So he's a guy that could be around the league a long, long time. In a two-way role, and it could be one of those guys as he develops that every team would like to have because he can play in a lot of different situations, kind of like Warren along those lines. And Tyler Johnson's just a guy who, you know, is not very big, very, very fast, and really has a nose for the net. He knows how to get himself in a position for a rebound or to score a goal, get a quick shot off. His offensive skills, I think, have really helped this team. As you mentioned, they needed it last year and just didn't have that on a consistent basis.
Rick, the penalty kill has been much better for the Lightning this year, currently sitting at 7th overall in the NHL at 85.4%. What would you attribute this turnaround to?
Well, goaltending's been a big part of that. I think that Bishop has been a big part of it, and Anders Lindback and the chances that he's had to play, he's been able to step up in those situations. But early in the season, they were struggling with that, and they had a game with the Penguins, one of their two losses at home, and they lost that one 5-4, and the culprit primarily was the penalty killing. They gave up three power play goals. But since then, they've given up one power play goal about 35 times short. And I think that what they want to do this year with it is be much more aggressive. And they kind of struggled with that adjustment in terms of style and responsibility and positioning and so forth that needed to be done from the style of previous seasons to what they wanted this year. They've made the adjustments, and combined with the very solid goaltending, it's been a very efficient unit that has helped them win a lot of games.
Rick, we'll let you go on this last question, and as you would expect being with us here in Canada, a lot of our focus is on the upcoming Sochi Olympics and then the quest for Canada to go back-to-back in gold medals in hockey. Obviously, the Canadian men's Olympic team is being headed by Lightning General Manager Steve Yzerman. Have you noticed much of a difference in how he's been able to handle the day-to-day commitments with the Lightning and the Team Canada General Manager duties?
Steve, in the time that he's been with the Lightning, has been, you might describe him as stealth, because he kind of slips in and slips out. He's very low-key, certainly is not a high-profile general manager, as I'm sure you've noticed, and his dealings, whether it's with the Lightning or the Olympic team, he wants to let the players do their thing. He observes, he shows up at road games, he doesn't necessarily always travel with the team. And I think he's mixing in assignments where he needs to go look at players from other teams and so forth in making decisions on his Olympic team. And, it's very much under the radar in terms of, hey, where's Steve today? And he'll show up at game time, and he is there for the games and might travel with a team in and out of a city or whatever. But he's getting his work done, I think, on both fronts and very, very quietly about it, which is just his nature.
Rick Peckham is the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning on Sun Sports. Rick, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
Always great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Take care, Rick. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek. Big thank you to Rick Peckham for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview we conducted earlier with Tyson Nash of the Phoenix Coyotes, they will be available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and on TSN1290.ca. Right now, we're going to tell you about six things we learned this week.
Six.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
We'll start this week with Ezra Ginsberg. Jimmy Howard deserves serious consideration to be one of the three goalies selected to play for Team USA at the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics.
Okay, and before I get going here on a nice little diatribe, he was invited to Team USA's Olympic orientation camp, so it's not like he's completely off the radar.
Right.
But what I mean by that is, if you look at the goaltenders, and right now there are some people who think Ryan Miller is back as the number one goaltender for Team USA based on the way Jonathan Quick has played. Corey Schneider is injured right now for the New Jersey Devils, and Craig Anderson's injured right now. So if you look at the six goalies, because remember John Gibson of a prospect, a younger guy, was also invited. But if you look at Jimmy Howard, Dave, out of the six goalies that were invited, a lot of people thought Jimmy Howard was actually the fifth out of those six goalies. Some people actually had him sixth, but the way he played last night against the Winnipeg Jets is incredible. And the thing with Jimmy Howard is, it's not just the way he's played this year or the way he's played in the last couple of years. Last year in the playoffs, he was unbelievable. And you guys remember, they were up 3-1 in the Chicago Blackhawks. He was a huge part of that. I got an interesting stat for you here. Jimmy Howard's .918 save percentage is better than all but four goalies in the NHL who have played at least 100 regular season games. Now, I know that everyone said, oh yeah, Nicklas Lidström, and he's a byproduct of how good they are defensively. But the fact is, the numbers speak for themselves. Sure. Those four goalies that are in there, you're talking about Henrik Lundqvist, you're talking about Pekka Rinne, I believe also, I'm forgetting a couple of the other goalies, but the point being that he's up there as far as his numbers and success, 335 win seasons, he's in there. And if you look at the way the other goalies have played, I think he deserves serious consideration. And I know we've talked about how strong the U.S. is in goal. I think Jimmy Howard, has earned his, at least he needs to be in the conversation.
Five.
Dave Minuk, Feder Chutin of the Columbus Blue Jackets, has some interesting comments, and he is going to have to apologize for them.
Well, he already has apologized. He's tried to take them back. Essentially, what he said was, he was talking about Semyon Varlamov's recent troubles with the police, and his comment, his quote was, "The only mistake that of Semyon is that he got together with this girl." Now, the quote was translated from Russian by Yahoo Dmitry Chesnikov. So he didn't argue with the translation, but he felt that he was said it in the heat of kind of learning the news, and this is how he qualified his comments. And then he apologized, and apparently today an Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch wrote about it, talking about how he was visibly upset when he was talking about the situation. Said he, Feder Chutin said he had his own daughters and a wife, and that he doesn't feel that women should be mistreated. And that's very nice to say, but at the same time, you just get this idea that the mentality is completely different over in Russia than it is in North America.
Sure, difference in culture. Here's the exact quote from Feder Chutin in an interview with R Sport. "I personally know Semyon very well. He is quite a true, considerate guy. As soon as I heard it all, I realized that it is all blown out of proportion. It's just American laws are on the woman's side. That's why they can go to the police for any little thing, complain, and bring a lot of problems to men. That's why the only mistake of Semyon is that he got together with this girl." Obviously, abhorrent comments. In the interest of full disclosure, he did walk the comments back, and this is what he said earlier today. "I don't support any violence against women. I have my own two daughters. I would never want anything like it to happen to them. I know Semyon. I know him very well. I was just trying to be supportive to him. I should have chosen my words a little better. I think everybody is innocent until proven guilty. I just feel like everybody's convicted of him already. Knowing him pretty well, I was trying to support him. The words came out. I'm totally against it. My two little daughters and my wife, I would never want anybody to do anything like that against them. The Blue Jackets also issued a statement. We have discussed this with Feder and believe that while he chose his words very poorly in an attempt to support a friend, he in no way condones violence against women or anything else. As an organization, the Columbus Blue Jackets vehemently oppose all forms of violence directed at any individual." So you hope that Tootin was sincere with his second comments, because his first comments are really beyond the pale and just not appropriate in any walk of life.
Four.
Ezzie Ginsberg, Minnesota Wild forward Nino Niederreiter, is starting to live up to the potential that saw him drafted fifth overall by the New York Islanders in 2010.
Right, and I didn't just pick this one because Niederreiter is similar to Niedermeyer. But Nino Niederreiter, I'm going to get this messed up. 2010, he was a fifth overall draft pick.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, he's playing for the Islanders, and he played about two-thirds of the season, a little bit less, 55 games, and he only had 2 points. He's really disappointing. So last year, Garth Snow sent him down, and he played the entire year in Bridgeport. And he was close to a point a game. And that experience really helped him. And now you see him playing on the third line. He's playing right now with Michael Granlund and either Jason Pominville, but most of the time with Jason Pominville. Sometimes they've had Heatley up there, or I know Charlie Coyle's back, but for the most part, he's playing on the second line right now. And he's got 9 points in 15 games, and he's starting to really emerge. He's got a ways to go, but Niederreiter's the type of guy who's got great speed, and that's why they drafted him in New York, because he's got unbelievable speed, and he was a good player in the WHL. But he's finally starting to put it together, because you talk about players and how they develop. He was a guy that was most likely rushed into the NHL. That's why he struggled with the Islanders. Mm-hmm. And you remember the trade? It was, we were at the draft, and the trade was Niederreiter for Clutterbuck.
Yeah.
It's looking like a great trade right now. No offense to Clutterbuck, but Clutterbuck's kind of a grit guy, an energy guy who hits. He's not going to get much offense.
Yeah.
Niederreiter, he might end up with 40, 45 points this year. So it's looking like a good trade for Minnesota. Like
Clutterbuck usually leads the NHL in hits.
And having a greasy mustache as well.
Of course. But Niederreiter can put the puck in the net, and you just don't find those guys every day. Dave Minuk, Philadelphia Flyers beat writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, Frank Saravelli, has an odd sense of humor.
So the Washington Philadelphia game, he had the 3 stars vote, and he tweeted out, "I have the 3 stars vote tonight. Is it screwed up to give one to Ray Emery, you know, just for the hell of it?" Well, the answer, of course, is yes, it is screwed up. And he defended his actions by saying, "I didn't pick him as a traditional third star because he played a good game. I happen to find it entertaining." And he said that he got that Emery got the crowd going, and that even his teammates didn't have a problem with his actions.
You know, we know Frank, and you know, he can do whatever he wants. Obviously, here's my twofold problem with this situation. One, don't pretend that you weren't doing anything besides just trolling. You know, just own it. Yeah, I'm trolling. It was a terrible game. I'm trying to, you know, make a name for myself a little bit. Whatever. Just own that part. I don't really have a problem with it. But don't tell me that, you know, you really thought he deserved the third star because he fired up the team. They were down 7-0.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't do anything besides make a name for yourself, Frank.
There was a lot of notoriety, I'm sure, that got attached to him. I mean, they supposedly now the team has asked him no longer to make the third star select.
You know, the team could have just as easily taken his 3 stars and subbed out Ray Emery. Well, so the Flyers certainly don't have any high road to stand on in this instance.
And one of Saravalli's claims is that from all the Flyers players I've spoken with, none of them had a problem with it.
And I've heard different reports than that from other Flyers people. So, you know,
what a surprise. There's some fighting going on in Philly.
Yeah, there's some fighting going on in Philly, and like everything in life, the truth lies somewhere in between.
2.
Ezzie Ginsberg, the New York Rangers have to return to playing a more simplified brand of hockey because they are still struggling to adapt to Alain Vigneault's up-tempo transition style.
We all knew what the difference between Alain Vigneault and John Tortorella was. John Tortorella, we know that he likes guys to sacrifice their bodies and block shots and play more of a kind of a dump-and-chase cycling type of hockey. More so of a dump-and-chase, not less of a transition game. But Alain Vigneault likes the up-tempo style, transition style. The problem is, this is a different team with different players. And the New York Rangers have an excellent defense, but right now, they're letting their goalies out to dry, and they're having a lot of difficulty playing this style. Last night they lost 2-1 to the Anaheim Ducks, who they've gotten fleeced earlier on in the season. We know that they got whooped by the San Jose Sharks 8-2 earlier in the season. Alain Vigneault, I'm not saying that he can't bring some of what made him successful in Vancouver, but right now the New York Rangers, they just look discombobulated. They're not playing well as a team, and this team has way too much talent. I know Rick Nash is out right now with a concussion, and Ryan Callahan just came back, but they need to simplify it a little bit more because you can tell they're trying to do way too much. They're forcing things, and again, with a goalie like Lundqvist and the defense like they have, they need to simplify their game because the season is slipping away for them very quickly.
1.
To wrap up 6 things, Dave Minuk, you have some suspicions that perhaps the Anaheim Ducks, the team with the most points in the NHL so far this season, might be a little bit of a smoke and mirrors team.
Well, my concern is on the special teams because in 2013, the PP was ranked 4th in the league and the PK was 13th. And as of right now, the Ducks' power play is 30th and the PK is 29th. So, I mean, they're winning a lot of games differently and they're winning. And we just saw them go on the road and they had a stellar record there.
Yep.
But I don't know that they can maintain that with allowing a lot of, you know, power play goals against, and you're not getting many for your team. So can they continue at that pace without an effective special teams? I'm not sure.
They really miss Sheldon Surrey, Dave. He was really good on the power play last year, but I think you're onto something because last year they were good in the regular season, and then they get beat by Detroit in the first round. So, you know, they have to prove to everyone that they're not just a regular season team at this point, and they can maybe perhaps get back to being the Ducks of 2007 when they won the Stanley Cup. But Dave is right. You can't really be a top-tier NHL team if you don't have pretty good special teams. You don't have to be top three, but you definitely don't want to be bottom three either.
That's it. Those are the 6 things we learned this week. We didn't learn anything else. The rest of the time, we just poked berries up our noses.
It's just hockey. I don't ever learn anything that isn't hockey related.
No, we threw rocks at each other the rest of the time.
Didn't some big city mayor do something? I don't know.
Yeah, I heard something along those lines. I wasn't sure exactly what
he did something. And
don't you have some sort of big announcement coming up next segment?
I do.
Okay.
It's coming up next segment.
Okay, next segment. Yep. Ezzie's big announcement.
Yep.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
What is this?
Drew, this is something that they, you know, it's called EDM, electronic dance music.
Why are you carrying glow sticks and wearing a soother right now?
I'll tell you what it is. This is horrible.
Remus, hold on. Remus is good with music. What do you think?
I don't know if I like this. I'm into this kind of music, though.
Oh, it's terrible.
Right. Remus is an EDM kind of guy.
Am I even on?
I don't know. You're the one operating the show, so if your mic isn't on, it's your own fault.
Are you guys on?
Yes, I think so, and I can hear you too.
Anyways, welcome back.
If we were at a rave in a warehouse, this would be good music, but this is a sports show.
Yeah, I'm too old.
We should be playing.
I'm too old to go to raves.
You know what, Dave? I don't disagree with you often.
Fair enough.
Actually, I don't ever disagree with you, but that music, it stinks.
It's good to you know, roll your car windows down and just, you know, drive down Corden with.
Thank you, Remus.
No. Well, both of you can go to Corden afterwards and do that on your own.
No, it's
now. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290.
Where we promise we'll never play that.
Wait,
music
is this
again.
A hockey show or a music show?
Ezzy, you had some sort of big announcement?
I do have a big announcement. I don't know if I can make this announcement listening to this.
Yeah,
can whatever
you
this is.
Turn the music off.
I mean, maybe
David fist bumping.
This is just awful music. I mean, put some Zeppelin on or put some Hendrix or
I'm with Remus.
Something good. Some good music. I have an announcement to make. There was we were joking earlier, and there was a big announcement made by a big city mayor, and a lot of people were asking me about a lot of rumors that were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to address those rumors.
Yeah.
And I want to admit to everybody that I do eat smoked meat. And that was, there was a lot of people that, you know, were saying that, you know, and I want to admit to everybody that I do eat smoked meat.
Yeah, admitting is,
and I will not resign from the Illegal Curve Hockey Show because of this. We have to get back to business. There's a lot of hockey to talk about. There's a lot of work that we have to do. And in 2014, I want everybody to make their decision if you want ICSEG to stick on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, or if you think that my addiction to smoked meat makes me unable to perform my duties on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So, again, I apologize, and I know that a lot of people will judge me for eating smoked meat, but I think I can still be a solid contributor to this show, even though I do eat smoked meat. But I want to, you know, promise everybody I'm working on it. I'm seeing someone. I'm trying to, you know, get off of my addiction to smoked meat.
Is that someone, a deli person?
So that was my big announcement.
That was,
I mean, it's tough. It was tough for me to do this live on air, but I thought, you know, Remus was really supportive of me. He said that I could do it.
Yeah.
So I'm just really happy that you guys are accepting of me, and I think a lot of the fans out there will be accepting of my, you know, admission that I have eaten smoked meat.
It's beautiful, really. It brings a tear to my eye. I mean,
that could go down as one of the greatest 30, 40 seconds of a show ever.
Yeah, there was a hell of a soliloquy there that Ezzy eats a lot of smoked meat. Getting back to hockey, David Desharnais and Luke Shen.
Yep.
David Desharnais of the Montreal Canadiens,
yep,
and Luke Shen of the Philadelphia Flyers are both healthy scratches tonight for their respective teams.
Yep.
You know, are either of those guys what you would qualify as buy low candidates right now?
Well, as far as Luke Shen goes, the Philadelphia Flyers were after him for a while, and the Toronto Maple Leafs were after James Van Riemsdyk, and I know you want to talk about him after. But Luke Shen has struggled, like a lot of guys on the Philadelphia Flyers have struggled this year. And, you know, Craig Berube's decided to make an example out of him. And Luke Shen's still a young defenseman. And he's in his early 20s, and he's having... I still really like Luke Shen, but he's having tons of problems right now. And as far as he goes, I think this is one... They need him in the lineup, by the way. You've got Hal... They've put Hal Gill back in the lineup, and he's played a couple of games in a row now after being a healthy scratch. But Luke Shen, as far as being a buy-low candidate, put it this way, I think a lot of teams would be interested in Luke Shen's services. He's a guy, a good stay-at-home defenseman, very physical, can eat up a lot of minutes.
He's making a lot of money, though.
He is making a lot of money, but he's a solid defenseman. Let's be honest.
He's
right now, this
2 years after this year at $3.6 million.
Yeah, that's not that bad, actually, for what he offers. Shen is a pretty good player. He's limited offensively, but as far as being a solid guy that can take care of his own zone, and he's very physical, and he can get the odd point, but he moves the puck really well. But this Philadelphia Flyers team, guys, has a lot bigger problems. You got to look at Claude Giroux Jacob Voracek. You got to look at a lot of players who aren't putting the puck in the net. These are guys that are, you talk about guys that are getting paid a lot of money. Claude Giroux and Voracek are getting paid big bucks too, and I think they have a combined one goal.
Yeah, something like that. Let's talk about Desharnais, because he's a guy who's, I find him to be sort of the more interesting of those two guys. Because Luke Shen doesn't really get me very, he doesn't get me very excited as a player anymore. We know what he is.
I'm a defensive defenseman myself, yes, so I get excited about those defensive defensemen. I'll talk about Kenny Danico all day long, Drew.
Desharnais is 27 years old. He's under contract for the Canadiens for another 3 years at $3.5 million per year. He had a really great year 2 years ago. He was his breakout year for the Canadiens. He had 60 points in 81 games. Last year, he had 28 points in 48 games. He's only got one assist so far this year in 15 games. Really struggling. To me, though, I mean, if you're going to pick a flyer on either of those two guys, and if Montreal was looking to get out from under Desharnais' contract, I have trouble believing that he just fell off that dramatically, that quickly. I don't know that he's going to be a 60-point guy again, but if you can get him back up to being a 45- or 50-point guy.
Yeah, I think he is a buy-low candidate, but the problem is when he signed that 4-year contract, and now he's making, an average about $4 million a year, I think that might be a deterrent to pick him up, because you look at and a thing we should mention about the interesting thing about David Desharnais, he's a small guy. Mm-hmm. He was undrafted, played Canadian university for McGill, and he was a guy that played in the ECHL and the AHL and worked his way up, a guy that I really admire because he really only made his mark with the Canadiens at 24, 25 years old, and he was really good. As you mentioned, he had 60 points a couple years back.
Over a point a game player for the Hamilton Bulldogs at the AHL when he was there.
He paid his dues in the AHL and the ECHL, and he worked his way up, and he struggled. And they wrote about this in the Montreal Gazette today. Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette, I believe we've had him on the show before, and he talked about the rise and fall of David Desharnais. And he's a guy that was down in the third or fourth line. A guy like him, he's not a guy that he can dump the puck in and kind of be a checking forward. He's a guy that needs to be in an offensive role. And right now, you look at who's really driving that ship for the Canadiens, it's Lars Eller, Alex Galchenyuk, and Brendan Gallagher, and then you throw in Plekanec and Desharnais and Plekanec, Rene Bork, and Max Pacioretty. I mean, there's a lot of offensive talent there, and he's not performing. When a guy like him is getting the ice time and he's not scoring, you know, that's why he's in the press box, because that's what happens. You get out of a top six role and then you play on the third line, you play on the fourth line. A guy like him can't play his game. His game is an offensive game. He's a guy that can play on the power play. But if you're talking about a team that's struggling to score goals, sure, he can help a lot of teams. We talked about the Phoenix Coyotes. They could use a guy like him, even though right now they're not doing too bad. But sure, why not? But a guy like Desharnais, because he's from Quebec, I bet they'll stick with him. But as far as
$3.5 million a year,
if he continues to struggle in Montreal, I think they might move. He might be a guy that they might move towards the trade deadline. But just because he's from Quebec and he has been a point of game player over the last 2 years, I think they'll stick with him for a while.
Before we go to break, inquiring minds, namely Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press, wants to know if you eat your smoked meat in a drunken stupor.
No, I
considering he broadcast this show in a drunken stupor, allow me to be the one who answers that question with an unequivocal yes.
No, I mean, I love Eddie Golden Tate. He's a fantastic writer. He's a football sports Hall of Fame writer. And, I appreciate his concern, but I only drink, or I should say, I don't eat smoked meat when I drink. I don't like to mix the two, but I do appreciate his concern and during this tough time. But I will continue, as I mentioned, to serve the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and I will run again in 2014 to continue to be on this show. And I think the people of Winnipeg will support me.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Terrible, terrible music.
One day you kids will understand.
Actually,
literally, your kids will like this music.
I like when Dave's here, because that means I'm not the oldest guy in the room when Dave's here. Dave is...
Well, like, physically, you're not the oldest.
Yeah, well, by you know, by biological age, I'm not the oldest. You know, maybe by personality,
there
but that's
go.
A separate issue altogether. Score update from around the NHL tonight. The Washington Capitals exploded in the second period. 5 goals. They've taken a 5-2 lead on home ice against the New York Islanders. Alex Ovechkin's got 2 goals on the game, which he's back from injury. So the Washington Capitals look like they're in offensive scoring machine right now. In Boston at the end of 40 minutes, the Dallas Stars and the Boston Bruins are tied up at 1 goal apiece. In Columbus, Ottawa leads the Columbus Blue Jackets 2-0. In Carolina, with 10.5 minutes to go in the second period, it's 0-0 between Philadelphia and Carolina. I look forward to that game ending 1-0 in a shootout, because neither of those teams can score. In Florida, Edmonton, the Edmonton Oilers lead the Florida Panthers 3-1. Real long-term rivalry between those two franchises right there, the Oilers and the Panthers. And in Montreal, a game you can watch on TSN, the Blues and the Habs are tied up at 1 goal apiece. Alexander Steen continues his tremendous start to the season. He's got his 13th goal of the season. And in Minnesota, the Calgary Flames and the Minnesota Wild are tied up at 1 goal apiece. That's your Tuesday evening score update so far. Reminder that tomorrow, of course, the Jets and the Blackhawks, they're on TSN National. They're also on here on TSN 1290. Jets looking for revenge on the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow night in Chicago. I think we got a little bit of time left for a couple of rapid-fire questions.
Rapid fire.
After an 18-year NHL career and 1,244 games played, Jason Arnott officially retired earlier today. What is your favorite memory of Jason Arnott's NHL career?
I'm going to steal Ezzie's New Jersey Devils moment, but the double OT game win, Stanley Cup winning goal in Game 6 for the New Jersey Devils. That the ping that shot made was just, like, I'm sure it was hurt. It resonated around the arena and into our TVs. It was a phenomenal moment for him, and that definitely, to me, is the highlight moment of Jason Arnott's career.
Yeah, it you can't pick any other moment than that. And the reason why that goal was so special was because it was 5 years after the first Devils win, and the fact that Jason Arnott was kind of an unrated part of that team. That year, if you guys remember, it was kind of all about the defense, and Scott Stevens won the Conn Smythe, and Scott Gomez was a rookie. But that goal was so special because you had Eliash picking the puck out of the corner and feeding it to Jason Arnott. But, you know, just on the topic of Jason Arnott, he was such a great hockey player, and he had injury problems, and he wasn't able to play much for St. Louis. That was the last team he played for. But he was a really kind of an underrated player. He's one of those guys that never scored 40 goals and he never got 100 points. But he was a very solid player for the Devils for a really long time. And then he went to Dallas after that. But one of my all-time faves, Jason Arnott, and he had a great hockey career. So it's a good day to celebrate for him.
Last week, Dallas Eakins, the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, told this story. This would be where Remus would be
plays the story,
playing the audio.
Is feeling the heat.
I'm walking my daughter to school yesterday, and I got one kid yelling to everybody that's the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, and my 5-year-old daughter gets real excited because, oh yeah, that's my daddy. And then I got another kid yelling, "You suck!" And then the look on my daughter's face is one of something different.
By telling this story, is Dallas Eakins simply giving us a new entry for kids say the darndest things, or is it a sign that the pressure of the Oilers' terrible start to the season is getting to them?
I think it's kids say the darndest things type of thing. I mean, I think if Claude Noel had his kids in Winnipeg and the Jets were on a losing streak, Dave, then somebody might go up to Claude Noel and say, oh, the Jets suck or something like that. I mean, I think Dallas Eakins is a guy that's played a long time in the NHL, the AHL, the IHL, and he's coached a lot with the Toronto Marlies in the AHL. I think he's going to be able to handle it fine. let's be honest, guys. The Oilers have had injuries to key players, whether it's Gagne or Taylor Hall now, and it was Nugent Hopkins for a bit. The goaltending has been bad. The defense has been bad. I think Akins is the perfect guy for that job, even though the Oilers have struggled. I know they're winning tonight. They're beating Florida. But this season is really, really young here. And I think as far as what he was saying to the assembled media there, I think it was kind of funny, and he was just really saying that, you know, some kids can be a little bit cruel. Kids say the darndest things. I mean, we've all seen the Bill Cosby show, right?
I think he seemed mildly perturbed, but I think he understands that it's part and parcel of living in a Canadian city.
It really didn't sound like he was telling the story in a ha-ha,
yeah, no, he definitely,
look at me fashion.
But back to your question, I don't think that Dallas Eakins is by any means, you know, it's getting to him. I think he's got enough experience, as I said, as a player and as a coach in the American League, that he'll be able to turn this around. I don't know if Edmonton will be a playoff team. But I think they're going to play better because they've been awful this year.
The part of the story he didn't say was that he went over and jerseyed the kid.
Fair enough. That's it for today and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Tyson Nash, the Phoenix Coyotes analyst, and a big thank you to Rick Peckham, the Tampa Bay Lightning play-by-play man. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download both on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Be sure to subscribe and get it sent to you each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. And next Wednesday, we're back to our regular start time of Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for NHL Midweek. For producer Michael Remus, for Dave Manuk, who we thank for filling in for the last couple days, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. It's not usually Tuesday, but if it's Tuesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.